what happens in effect is there's a threat that's given to the school district that these funds will be taken away unless something very quickly and obvious happens to be in compliance with those guidelines. So needless to say, that puts a little fear in the officials at the school district level, if that's something that's going to happen. Another law that I believe speaks specifically to one of the questions that I was given here has to do with private information that a public school system will take from a student or keep in a school as a student's records. What does the school district have a right to do with the information that they gather on your child? Well, according to the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act of 1974, also known as FERPA, it's a federal law that protects the privacy of student education records. Students have specific protected rights regarding the release of such records, and FERPA requires that institutions adhere strictly to these guidelines. Therefore, it is imperative that the faculty and staff have a working knowledge of FERPA guidelines before releasing educational records. This was a quote from a memo that was put out to a school boards association group. Basically, what this law says is that students and parents have a right to access any of the educational records that are kept by the school. So, if your son or daughter is attending a school, you have the right as a parent, they have a right as a student to go in and inspect whatever's in the record file for that student. Also, they have a right to demand educational records be disclosed only with student consent, which means if someone else is having access to the student's records, then they are in the school would be in violation unless it's one of the approved with consent from the parent or the student to view those records. There are a few exceptions, and I'll go over those, but mainly it's going to be only with permission from parents or students can someone else access those records. The parent and the student has the right to amend educational records. Now, that doesn't mean that if you don't like your B that you just received, you can go in and change it to an A. What it means is that if you think there's something inaccurate, if there's something wrong, something that discloses information that's not necessary for the school to have in that record, you have the right as a parent to go in and request to have that either removed or modified to where it's in your opinion, correct. Now, if the school district decides that what's in there, they're going to keep in there after you've requested this, then there is a formal due process that you follow that includes a hearing that you would have. And at that hearing, there would be school officials and you and the student, and if you have an advocate, whether it's a lawyer or whatever, to be available at that meeting, then it would be determined at that meeting what the outcome would be. If after that meeting it is decided by the school district that we're not going to change what's in the record, then you have a right as a parent and as a student to add your own statement to that record. So if you think there was an error, but no one else is acknowledging that and will help you by changing what's in that record, you have a right to place your own letter of statement in that record that denies whatever it is you think is wrong, so that everyone that looks at that record, has access to that record in the future, knows that you are refuting that information. Now, how does this play into a parent wanting to know information about their student? Well, basically, if you're a parent, you can go in and look at any of those records when you want to. As long as the school's open, you should have the right to go in and access those records. The question was asked, what about student work? if a student, say, is writing a journal for an English class, and that English teacher has kept papers for your student with those journal entries. Let's say as a parent, I'm concerned about something that I'm seeing in my student and my child, and I want to see what they're thinking. I want to see what's written on that journal that the teacher has. This, as far as I could tell from the study I've done, because it is identifiable by student, what that teacher has in their possession is really your student's work, not theirs. They didn't take the notes, the student wrote the journal. And because it's identifiable, because the student's name is on it, then you as a parent have the right to request that information. And it would be a matter of you requesting that. I would recommend starting with the teacher, and then if that doesn't work, work your way up that chain of authority that we talked about, requesting that work. Some teachers will view that as confidential information, and there might be some resistance. Just be prepared for that. But you have the right to go ask for that. Even if they resist, you have the right for that. And it may end up going to the principal or the superintendent even before you would get what you're requesting, but you have the right to do that. Now, under this particular law that the federal government oversees, you would not have the right by the law to access individual notes that the teacher has written about your student. For instance, if a teacher were to keep notes about their students to help them remember something about that student, or maybe to help them go back and document something that they're seeing happening to that student in their classroom, because that is not a part of the student's work, because it's never going to be a part of the student's educational record, because it was private to that one person, the teacher, it's not accessible to anyone else, that is not considered in the same category as the things we just mentioned. And so that would certainly be open to subpoena by a court of law should a judge ever decide that that's to be accessed. But as far as a parent going in and saying, I want to see all your notes that you've taken in private on any of these students that I'm interested in, or my own child, it's very likely that you're gonna get denied that request, and there wouldn't be any legal precedent to go in and force that teacher to give you that information. So the difference is it's not student work, and it's not accessible to anyone else on that. Okay, questions on that? On any of these three laws that we've talked about, the IDEA, the 504, or the FERPA law? Yes, sir.
Is Title IX still involved?
Title IX has to do with the funds that are given to the school. And it's my understanding that if they violate one of these laws, those Title IX funds can be withdrawn.
That's discrimination, sexual discrimination.
Mm-hmm. And then we're also looking at, let's see, here. That's the Equal Access Law. Yep. That's another one here we'll get to real quick. Okay. Any questions on the FERPA or the IDEA or the 504? Okay, the next one then, the equal access. And this really has some major ramifications, I think, for young people who want to express their religious beliefs at school. Give me just a moment to grab this right page here. Okay. The Equal Access Law passed in 1984 applies only to public secondary schools which receive federal financial assistance, which would be the funds that are given through the federal government, already have a limited open forum. Now, let me pause there a moment and just describe what we're talking about here. Equal access law basically says that all students will have equal access to the educational opportunities in a school. This first came about because of the imbalance, I guess you might say, between sporting opportunities for men and women. It was not uncommon several years ago for there to be maybe only one or two sports that a young lady could participate in and several for a young man. Well, this equal access law says that those need to be balanced. They need to be fair, open to all, regardless of gender. But there's many more ramifications to this, one of which I think is some of the questions here that I had listed to make sure I cover. The equal access law also says that if you have an open forum policy at your school, what's meant by that is you allow student groups to meet and express whatever they're interested in expressing, whether it's chess club or skeet shooting. We have a trap masters club at the school I attend. Whether it's foreign language club or whatever, as long as it's not directly related to a particular class, a course of study, if it's extracurricular, and you allow any of those groups to meet beyond the school day in on the public school campus, using a room and all those facilities to do that, you have to allow all. So if you allow one, you allow all. Now, there's two ways to look at this. There's sure a positive side, and there's the potential for negative. I've been sitting in a principal's office one time where they were presented with the possibility of having to allow some rather unsavory things to occur because of this law. And the decision was being made, should we just not let anybody do anything? That way we'd be in compliance because we aren't letting one and denying another. Fortunately, in our school, and I would suppose that would be the case in the schools in this area as well, reason usually rules in most cases, where the faculty, the staff are not going to be willing to sponsor something that would cause an uproar in the community, and therefore those unsavory groups out there that might want to use the building for something usually never have a voice in the matter. But now let's look on the positive side of this. If there is a chess club that meets after school, then there can also be a Bible study that meets after school. In fact, let me read just a quick passage here. This is actually updated by the No Child Left Behind Act, which some of you may have heard of. It says, students may pray when not engaged in school activities or instruction, subject to the same rules designed to prevent material disruption of the educational program that are applied to other privately initiated expression activities. Among other things, students may read their Bible or other scriptures, say grace before meals, and pray or study religious materials with fellow students during recess, the lunch hour, or other non-instructional time, to the same extent that they may engage in non-religious activities. Students may organize prayer groups and religious clubs, and these groups must be given the same access to the school facilities as other groups. When acting in their official capacities as representatives of the state, teachers, school administrators, and other school employees are prohibited by the Establishment Clause from encouraging or discouraging prayer, from actively participating in such activity with students. Teachers may, however, take part in religious activities where the overall context makes clear that they are not participating in their official capacities. So I think that answers a lot of questions, is what do students have the right to do at school? They have the right to carry their Bibles, they have the right to pray, they have the right to study their Bibles with other students. The laws, again, because we are blessed to be in a country where we have these freedoms, students have a right to do this. This is not against the rule. Now, what happens if we have a rather overprotective or maybe a slightly paranoid principal, and he's afraid that if somebody catches wind that people are having a Bible study, that there's going to be problems in the community over that, people who are against that. We're going to take a break here in just a moment, and I think we'll take an approach of how do we take these issues to the people in the school and behave like a Christian and still be able to exercise the rights that we have as a parent in this country, or in this state, Missouri. Okay, we left off talking about how we might approach the school system with issues that we might have about where children are being treated, or concerns about things that might be going on in the classroom. I'd like to take a few moments to just review some passages in the Bible that I believe, at least for me, help put me in the right mindset to make that approach. Remembering that the public school system is a branch of the government, or an arm of the government, I'm reminded of Romans 13th chapter, the first seven verses there. I'd like to turn there and read some from that. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. When I approach someone in authority in the public school system, I am approaching a part of the government. And I believe as a Christian, I would want to have the attitude of submitting to the authority of the government, where I could, in a clear conscience, do so in the sight of God. 1 Peter, the second chapter, the 13th verse, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be the king as supreme, and we go right on down to the governors and so on. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. So, it's very easy for me as a taxpayer, when I put my taxpayer hat on, to start thinking in terms of, you know, I deserve this, or I deserve that, I should have the right to do this, I should have the right to do that. I'm reminded of when Jesus was approached by Peter in Matthew the 17th chapter, 24th verse. When they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, doth not your master pay tribute? And he said, yes. When he was come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, what thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom of tribute, of their own children or of strangers? Peter said to them, of strangers. Jesus saith unto him, then are the children free. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go to the sea and cast an hook and take up the fish that first cometh up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and thee. Jesus paid taxes. Now, do you think Jesus could sit there and say, I liked everything that was happening with that tax money? And Jesus paid, later on, Matthew 22nd, chapter 17th verse, when Jesus recommended that people pay taxes to Caesar, tribute to Caesar. Render unto Caesar what's Caesar's, to God what's God's. You think Jesus was endorsing everything that Caesar did with the tax money? No. I likewise need to take a step back, I believe, as a Christian, even though there's a part of me that really is irritated. Maybe sorely vexed would be a phrase I could use there. In the way in which the money that I have given is being spent. I still need to have the attitude that this is a part of the government. I need to, as long as it is not against my conscience, asking me to do something that's against the Lord's will, I need to pay the tribute. And I need to have the attitude of being submissive to the authority, just as if I were being submissive to the Lord. Now, having said that, we don't want to use a righteous cause, which we may very well have in approaching a teacher over something that we think is wrong. We may have a very good cause, a righteous cause for what we're going to do. We don't want to use the righteous cause as a cloak of maliciousness. We don't want to say, because I am right and you are wrong, I'm going to come in with both guns blazing. I don't believe that's the attitude that the Lord wants us to have here. We do need to remember also that besides the fact that they are an extension of the government, and we do have laws that we have to live under because of that, they are people. When we approach a teacher, we may be approaching an extension of the government, but we're also approaching someone that's an individual that has feelings, that has a soul. How do we approach that situation as a Christian? The right attitude, knowing why we believe what we believe, being able to give an answer for why we believe what we believe, but doing that, speaking the truth in love. So, with that in mind, as a background, let's just look at a practical way that we can approach a situation. If we think something is not happening in the classroom with our child that should be, or if something's happening that should not be, either way. My recommendation, based on why I think our attitude should be, would be to approach the teacher individually. First, go to that person, and in a private setting, without the teachers, other teachers, or other students, or anyone else around, explain our concern. Now, let me give you a hint here on what motivates a lot of people in the school district. School district is normally, the people who work in the school district normally are not highly motivated by money, or they probably wouldn't be working there. They're motivated sometimes for very good reasons. Intrinsically, they want to help other people. So if you happen to have a teacher that wants to help other people, and that's their true motive for being there, you're going to connect right away. What's best for this child? You've got something to work on there. If they happen to be there because they have a political agenda that they want to push with a classroom of students, then you might have something else that you're going to need to deal with. And you need to be ready to explain why it is that you think this thing is right or wrong. You need to be willing to go above or beyond just that teacher if what needs to be done there isn't done, and follow that chain of command. But I would encourage you to start with the teacher themselves. By far, the majority of people who work for the school district are going to be more concerned about public perception for their school than they are just about anything else. That's going to go right up from the teacher to the principal to the superintendent to the school board. How the community views the school is very important in general to the people that work in a school district, a public school district. So if there is a hint of something that's going to be really controversial, I can guarantee that one of those places up that level of command is going to sit down and have a very good conversation with you so that this doesn't become more than what they want it to become. So keeping that in mind, we start off at the lowest level. We are a Christian in attitude and process, and we follow as we need to up that chain of command as far as we need to go. My guess is the overwhelming majority of the time, if you have a valid, thoughtful reason for why you want something changed in that classroom, if it doesn't happen to the teacher, it'll probably happen at the principal level. And you'll come away having what you need for your child, and them having what they need, and the public being satisfied with their product. That's going to be the majority of the cases. If, however, you approach it as leaving a message that says, I'm very upset about what's happened to my child, and my lawyer and I are going to meet you after school tomorrow. Okay. If that's your approach, you're likely going to ratchet up the level of escalation to the point where you may have a fight on your hands. Won't be necessary in most cases. So I would just caution you to, as a practical way to deal with this, not to start with that kind of approach. You know, there's a lot of fear in public educators over lawsuits. And I can tell you right now that there's a lot of insurance premiums being paid out of teachers' salaries because of the threat of lawsuits. And if you want to stop a conversation, if you want to alienate yourself from people in the school district, threatening a lawsuit before you've even talked to them about what you're interested in is the fastest way to do that. All they're going to be concerned with after that point is how they can protect themselves. And that isn't necessarily what's going to be in your child's best interest. Okay? Questions or comments on that idea? How to approach a teacher? What things you might approach a teacher about? I said earlier, we are just so blessed to be in a nation where these things are not common everyday problems. And I believe, just in my own experience, we're in a part of the country where those things are not nearly a problem as they are in some other areas of our own country.
John? Just to make a comment based on the things you were saying earlier today. We're a homeschool family, and here in Missouri, the laws are very liberal, the things you cited. They are very lenient. We're pretty free to do whatever we want, but it's not like that. It's not like that everywhere in this country.
That's right.
Particularly the states that have had poor education in the past, they're trying to make sure the homeschoolers are where they want them to be, and the state is very involved. They have to report to the state. They have to have a social worker even or someone from the school system come into their home, test their children. So, yeah, we can be thankful, as you said, that we're in this part.
Yes, we can. Very good. D.D.
Well, it seems to me like some of these rules and policies, maybe from the federal government standpoint, is making it mandatory that school districts hire homosexuals. We've got one of those, and we're pretty sure we don't want our students in that class.
Okay. if you have an issue such as a teacher that you suspect to be, or perhaps has openly admitted that they practice homosexuality, and you do not want your child to have that influence, I would still recommend going to that teacher, starting at that level. Now, that's not going to be real comfortable. But I guess I view my duty as a Christian to address that issue from a biblical standpoint, from a righteousness standpoint, with that person. At least give them the opportunity to respond to that. You may not get what you want, but at least I've done what I believe is the right thing to do to start that dialogue, and then go right up the level of authority until you get either what you think is necessary for your child to be in the right environment, or there's always the option of doing your own schooling. And when it comes down to issues like that, I guess I would say at this point, my position on that is I have been very fortunate to be able to raise my four children in an environment where I thought that they were going to get what they needed, in an environment that was not going to be detrimental to them morally. It sure helped that I was there, and I'll admit that. That was quite an advantage for me to be in the school as my children come through. I know who they got, who was talking to them every day, the teachers, I was familiar with them. That gave me an advantage over a lot of parents. But if at any point in time, and there were times when we questioned, Melinda and I had to seriously consider, but if at any point in time I thought that my child was going to be in a detrimental environment morally, Melinda would have become the teacher. We would have had another way to do that. And I certainly understand why many people have chosen it, and I think it's a wonderful thing. On the other hand, I don't want to become an advocate to the point where I make other people feel guilty, like they're less than spiritual if they don't do it. I do believe that's a decision for parents to make. What is right? Because who has the ultimate responsibility for your children? The parent.
Going back to your comment about you can't support everything that the state of Missouri does or the federal government does, is it not true that a person that is homeschooling or parochial schooling, their children can still be involved in sports and other extracurricular activities as part of the school system, even though they're not going to that school? Isn't that true?
That's a really good question. There's a yes and a no to that. The state of Missouri has written very plainly that if you're homeschooling or a private or a parochial school, you still have access to the courses that are available in your local school district. So, for instance, if I was homeschooling my child in most subjects, but I wanted them to go take a chemistry class, or I wanted them to go take a Spanish class, something that I didn't feel adequately prepared to teach them, I could take them to the school for whatever part of the day I wanted to and have them enrolled in just those courses. Now, sporting events are a different issue. There is a governing board called the Missouri State High School Activities Association, MISHA for short. All of the public high schools that compete with one another in the state of Missouri that I'm aware of subscribe to the MISHA oversight. And MISHA has rules that unless your child is enrolled as a student at that school in at least 2.5 credits for high school, that is, which would roughly be 5 classes as a minimum, then you will not be eligible to participate in MISHA-sponsored activities, the competition sports. But that doesn't say anything at all about the chess club, the foreign language club, the other things, the trap masters or whatever, the other things that meet after school. there is some discretion that the individual school district has in making that determination, but they cannot, the state of Missouri, school district cannot deny the student access to the classes. That's consistent with what you found, isn't it? Okay. All right. Good question. Yes.
With the comment in mind about the homosexual teacher and other objectionable things going on in the schools, mm-hmm. reinforces what we learned earlier today in bringing up a child in a way that he should go so they, mm-hmm. they know that, yes, this is wrong, this is the way it should be, and maybe we have to tolerate it sometimes and be a little stronger in our own, in our teaching at home.
Well, that's going to have to be something that a parent decides. That would be a tough issue for me to say, just go ahead and go and tough it out on that one, kid. I would have a hard time with that one, personally. You got a follow up?
I'm not referring to homeschooling, but I mean at home teaching our child in a way that bringing them up
yes.
in a way that they should be.
Right.
So
yes. I think I may have misinterpreted your statement there a little bit. Yes. Okay. Yes, to look at that and say what's best for my child. Can they exist there and be taught without detriment to their moral upbringing or not? And to me, that would certainly be a tough issue to swallow. Yes?
Just with the comments, I think of 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, when Paul writes, I wrote to you an epistle not to keep company with sexual immoral people. Yet I certainly do not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters. Since then, you would need to go out of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to encounter that in our life.
Sure.
We can do our best to influence others and mm-hmm. do what's right, but you have an eye for it.
And the way, the integrity with which you approach that situation is going to be witnessed by your child, as well as the teacher that you're going to, as well as their other teachers in the district. They're going to hear about your conversation, not through you, but probably through other people. The way you handle the situation with the principal are all going to see the Christian attributes you have in you. And there is definitely an opportunity when you approach these situations to help people understand in a positive way what the Lord's will is and how you're exercising that for your children. So what may be a very difficult thing to do could be a very positive thing to do. Now, are you going to be getting that person fired? Maybe that's the question some people have. Just get rid of them, get them out of the school. I don't know that you're going to have any say or any authority on that at all. What you're going to do is take care of your child. That's your primary responsibility, and to obey the laws of the state. And you can present this in a Christian way, but you know, are we going to react in such a way that we set out a campaign to change public education? Or are we concerned about our child and we're taking care of our child? It reminds me of when Peter and John were imprisoned for teaching. When Peter and John were imprisoned for teaching, what was the church doing when they were praying? Think about that. There wasn't a picket line that was in front of the Sanhedrin Council with banners and posters. They didn't have their pitchforks and their torches chanting outside the chambers of the Sanhedrin. We didn't have campaigns that collected money for publication of the misfortunes of Peter and John at the hands of the Sanhedrin. We had people that were praying. What were they praying for? was boldness, wasn't it? They were praying to the Lord that they would have the boldness to stand up and to keep preaching and stand up for what's right. That was the response. And I guess I would take from that that if I thought something was happening wrong with my child, I would address that issue. But it would be in a way that is going to be a godly way, at least what I would perceive as a godly way of dealing with that, and not trying to go out and make a huge deal and disrupt people's lives and cause undue or unnecessary problems for individuals because of what I was doing. Pray for them. Talk to them.
I don't think we should be in a position where we just swallow anything that comes at us. And I agree, there's an attitude we need to have in what God would give us. And yet we can see Paul defending himself. Is it legal to whip a Roman citizen like this?
Sure.
What is available?
More than once.
Yes. What is available, we can take advantage of.
That's right. And we do have rights as parents for these things that I mentioned. And we certainly have the right to examine the records of the student that we looked at before and so on. Yes, ma'am.
How detailed is the background checkup of your school? Is it a real detail, or is this sort of a skinny thing to say we did it? That ought to find out some of these problems
It's very possible that a thorough background check could find other places where problems have occurred, other districts that they may have had a job in and lost their job. It could find transgressions of the law that were recorded, convictions of things, felonies or even misdemeanors that they have been involved with should be evident from those background checks. What often happens, though, and unfortunately, I think, in most businesses, not just in education, is that there's a time element here to getting someone hired. There's also the privacy of that individual that's going to have to be balanced against the need of the district to hire people that are qualified. And there's a reluctancy on the part of those who are not firing but letting go someone for these problems to talk about it to the place that the person ends up in. I know I've had conversations with our principal before, and we've had some situations where people didn't work out because of personal habits and things, and they ended up being dismissed from our school. And come to find out, the principal knew that they had that same problem at the previous school. The principal even called the previous school, and nothing was said about it.
It's privacy.
Yeah. So there is an issue with that. It's a good point.
But your homosexual issue we're talking about, it's a don't ask, don't tell. You know, you can't ask them, per se, that question.
There's a little bit of a gray area there because that's not listed as one of the discrimination criteria per se, but that's certainly the way it's practiced. Edie?
Well, I was going to say, from conversation I've heard from the administrators, maybe even school board members,